Greetings and welcome to Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle. I'm the pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. And in this episode of Word Magazine, I want to do something like another supplement to the review that I've been doing of the James White, Thomas Ross debate on the best underlying text for the translation of the New Testament. They were discussing the differences between the Legacy Standard Bible, which is based on the modern critical text, and the Authorized Version, which is based on the traditional text in the Old Testament, the Masoretic text, and the New Testament, the received text, or the Textus Receptus, the great Protestant printed text that was used for all the vernacular translations of the post-Reformation, the Reformation, post-Reformation eras. So in this supplement, though, I want to look a little more closely at a few readings in the Legacy Standard Bible, especially at the ending of Mark. And I noted that one of my critiques of the debate between White and Ross was that in many ways they didn't spend a lot of time talking about the Legacy Standard Bible. And I thought it might be interesting just to look at a little bit at the Legacy Standard Bible as, again, as a sort of a supplement to our conversation about that debate. So what I want to do is I want to pull up on the screen, if I can, the website for the Legacy Standard Bible. I actually don't have yet a hard copy of the Legacy Standard Bible. I need to get a hold of one. And if you're not familiar with the Legacy Standard Bible, this is a new revision of the New American Standard Bible that was put together by John MacArthur and people in his church and the Master's Seminary and so forth. And so they were unhappy with some of the gender inclusive changes that were made to the New American Standard Bible. So apparently they were able to get the rights to it and they created their own revision of it. And again, I have not dipped deeply into the Legacy Standard Bible. I don't have a hard copy of it. And I'm just going to be looking a few places online. But before that, here at their website, you can pull up the foreword to the Legacy Standard Bible. And here are some of the things that are discussed in the foreword. Let's just look at this little section here that's called Alternative Readings. So they note, in addition to the more literal renderings, notations have been made to include readings of variant manuscripts, explanatory equivalents of the text, and alternate translations that may bring out a play on words difficult to maintain in the text. These notations have been used specifically to assist the reader in comprehending the terms used by the original author. So I'm not exactly sure what this means. On one hand, it's talking about things related to translation philosophy, that they provide alternate readings in the notes, apparently. But it also talks about the inclusion of readings of variant manuscripts, so textual variants. And so, again, I don't have the hard copy to examine it, so I'm not 100% sure about how exactly they format the Legacy Standard Bible text, what they do about notes, what they do about disputed passages. Let's go back to the foreword. Sorry, I lost it one more time. And they also have a section here on the Greek text. Let's just look at that. It says the Legacy Standard Bible has the benefit of a number of critical Greek texts in determining the best variant readings to translate. So this is a modern translation. Obviously, it's based on the modern reconstruction method. So the translators say we took several modern critical texts to reconstruct the text that we could make our translation from. And they note that they used the 27th edition of Eberhard Nessel's Novum Testamentum Graecae, supplemented by the 28th edition in the General Epistles, and this served as the base text. So basically, they used the NA28. The NA28 had the changes that were made to the General Epistles according to the use of the CBGM, but otherwise in the Gospels and the Pauline writings and Revelation, It followed the 27th edition. Then it says, on every variant reading, the Society of Biblical Literature Greek New Testament, as well as the Tyndale House Greek New Testament, were also consulted. So in addition to the Nesselon 28th edition, they used the SBL Greek New Testament of 2010, and they also used the Tyndale House Greek New Testament of 2017. And then they add, in the end, each decision was based upon the current available manuscript evidence. So they're saying, you know, they're updating the text. It's a very modern reconstruction philosophy. The text is being updated up to the minute with new discoveries and new methods. So very typical of a modern critical text. So let's just look at a few passages if we can. And let's just start off with Matthew, 6:13, which would be from the Lord's Prayer in the Sermon on the Mount. And you can see that the doxology is included apparently in the text, but it is put in brackets. For yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen. So whereas in many modern translations, like the NIV, the ESV, it's put down in the footnotes, here, at the least, it's included in the text, but it's put in these parentheses. And I'm not sure, I didn't see it in the forward and front matter, an explanation of what they believe the brackets conveyed. Do they mean we think it's doubted by some people, but we think it's legitimate, so we included it in the text? Or do they mean with the brackets what is meant in the modern critical text? If the brackets are there, the editors think it's unlikely that this is original, and maybe they just include it for historical purposes. So let's take a look at another passage. Let's look at Acts 8:37. That's another one that is often disputed, and this is the confession of the Ethiopian eunuch. And apparently, again, I don't have the hard copy. Apparently, this is included within the text, and you can see that it's put in brackets. And Philip said, "If you believe with all your heart, you may." And he, being the Ethiopian eunuch, answered and said, "I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God." So let's just to make sure, I'm going to put Acts 8, 36 through 38. And let's just see. Yeah, so it's, you can see verse 36 is not in brackets. Verse 38 is not in brackets, but verse 37 is. Well, we could say at least they don't put it down in the footnotes or remove it entirely, but it's there in the text. And but let's look and see what is done with 1 John 5:7-8, the Coma Johanneum, or the three heavenly witnesses. I messed up seven. Oh, there it is. Let's look that one up. And in this case, the three heavenly witness passage has been completely removed, apparently. And given that there are no other notations, I'm assuming there's not even a footnote. So it's done what the ESV or the English Standard Version editors did. They just completely removed it from the text. Again, I think this is an issue if you're confessionally reformed, you hold to something like the Westminster Confession of Faith or the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith. 1 John 5:7 is a proof text for the doctrine of the Trinity, and it's completely removed from the legacy standard Bible, apparently. Now, I'm just curious, given that they used the Nesselon 28th edition, let's look at 2 Peter 3:10. And this is the one where in the Nesselon 28th edition, it has a complete conjecture in that it adds the negative particle ook. And so here it's, their translation is, "But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be found out. And so this is actually keeping with the NA27 reading here that doesn't include the negative ook. Otherwise, it would say something like the earth will and its works will not be exposed. And so instead they say it will be found out. So that's kind of interesting. Now let's look at Mark 16, 9 through 20. And we'll just look at the larger context. We'll look at verses 1 through 20 to see what they do with this. So you can see that there's Mark 16, 1 through 8, but then they include verses 9 through 20, but they put them in brackets. We can see that. But the thing that stands out really is here at the end. Here at the end, after verse 20, which in the received text and translations based upon it, this is included in the text, no brackets. This is accepted as part of the canonical text. And it ends, here's the translation, and they went out and preached everywhere while the Lord worked with them and confirmed the word by the signs that followed. But now there is another segment that appears, and this is also in brackets. There's a closed bracket. So verses 9 through 20, that's what we call the traditional ending, or some call it the longer ending. But now there's another edition, and there's no editorial heading for it. So if you're just sitting down reading this Bible, it's just included. This is part of Scripture. And so this last part has the brackets about it, and it says, and they, apparently referring to the apostles, promptly reported all these instructions to Peter and his companions. And after that, Jesus himself sent out through them from east to west the sacred and imperishable preaching of eternal salvation. So what is this passage? Well, this is a textual variant that is known as the shorter ending of Mark. And it is found in every manuscript in which it is included between verses 8 and 9. So there are no extant manuscripts where this passage is put after verse 20. So the Legacy Standard Bible, as far as I understand, would be presenting by putting the shorter ending as sort of an alternative or a supplemental ending to the Gospel of Mark. This is something unprecedented, I believe, in the history of Protestant Bible translations. I don't know of any others that have done this. Even a lot of times, if you look at, for example, the New Living Translation, they include it, but they include the shorter ending between verses 8 and 9, the place where it appears in the manuscript tradition in a very few number of manuscripts. But the Legacy Standard Bible editors, nope, they've put it at the very end with no, maybe in the print copy they have some sort of footnote or explanation, but here in this online edition, they don't have that. So I want to look a little bit more at this reading that they've included that's called the shorter ending. And I want to look, if we can, at the article that I wrote. Let me just go back to the beginning. This is an article that I wrote back in 2018. It began really as a paper that I did at a theology conference in Texas when I was there, and for a theology conference in Houston. And then I took the article and I reworked it into this theological article that was our academic article that appeared in the Puritan Reformed Journal. And it's available on my academia.edu page. This is where we are now. So So it's about the title of my article is The Ending of Mark as a Canonical Crisis. And I, at one point in the article, I review the various alternative endings that have been presented for the Gospel of Mark. And so here's my historical overview of Mark's ending as a textual problem. And so I laid out at least five distinct endings which appear in the manuscript tradition for the Gospel of Mark. The first one I called the abrupt ending, and that is if Mark were to end at Mark 16:8, and there are only two early extant manuscripts that give evidence of this, Codex Sinaiticus and Codex Vaticanus. 99.9% of the manuscripts have the traditional ending, Mark 16, 9 through 20. So only these two end at verse 8. But you can see that my second of these five was the shorter or the intermediate ending, as it's sometimes called. And I said, in this tradition, the book ends at Mark 16, 8, plus the addition of what is known as the shorter ending. And then I said, there are no extant Greek manuscripts with this reading, but it appears in one old Latin manuscript known as Codex K or Codex Babiensis. And so this would be you have Mark 16, 1 through 8, and that's where Sinaiticus and Vaticanus end. But the shorter ending in the second alternative would be you have Mark 16, 1 through 8, and then you have the so-called shorter ending, and you don't have verses 9 through 20 or anything else. And so this is the second ending that I'm reviewing. And by the way, I discuss a little bit Codex K, which is an old Latin manuscript, or Codex Babiensis. You can see the footnote there, footnote 9. See the discussion of the ending of Mark in this manuscript in D.C. Parker, The Living Text of the Gospels from Cambridge, 1997. Parker observes, quote, "It should also be noted that this manuscript has a unique addition between verses 3 and 4. But suddenly, at the third hour of the day, it became dark throughout the whole world, and angels descended from heaven, and rising the glory of the living God ascended with him, and immediately it became light," end quote. So I quote that just to say that Codex Babiensis, it has kind of a free tradition. Not only does it end at verse 8 and then has the so-called shorter ending, but it also has a unique variant that's included there between verses 3 and 4. And I proceed, I said, see also the discussion of Codex K and Nicholas P. Lunn, the original ending of Mark, a new case for the authenticity of Mark 16, 9 through 20. Lunn observes, quote, "Babiensis exhibits a number of," I gotta go down to this page, "unusual readings. In addition to the insertion between verses 3 and 4, he also notes two so-called significant omissions in K's text of Mark 16, 1 through 8. Mark 16, 1 leaves out the names of the women who went to the tomb, while Mark 16, 7 in Babiensis omits the clause, and they said nothing to anyone." And then I ended the footnote. These variations clearly indicate that Codex K should be characterized as a maverick manuscript with regard to Mark's ending. And so, again, of the options, you've got the abrupt ending, end at verse 8, Sinaiticus and Vaticanus. You've got end at verse 8 plus the so-called shorter ending or intermediate ending. And you have no Greek manuscripts, and you have one old Latin manuscript that is a maverick manuscript and has some strange readings in it. And by the way, I also provided a translation of the shorter ending. I said it's translated in the English Standard Version, but in their footnote, but they reported briefly to Peter and those with him all that they had been told. And after this, Jesus himself sent out by means of them from east to west the sacred and imperishable proclamation of eternal salvation. And you remember that because that's what the Legacy Standard Bible now has after verse 20. The third option of the five that I listed was the traditional ending, Mark 16, 1 through 8, followed by verses 9 through 20. And again, that's 99% of extant manuscripts, including some of the oldest uncials. And then the fourth option that I talked about was the expanded ending. In this tradition, the ending of Mark includes the abrupt ending, that is, it goes to verse 8, the shorter ending, which is, it has that insertion that we've been talking about, and then it includes verses 9 through 20. And I said this reading is only found in seven rather late manuscripts, which will be discussed below. And then the last of the five options is the traditional ending with the so-called Freer Logion. And there's really only one example of this. It's Codex W or Washingtoniensis. And it has the traditional ending with the insertion after verse 14 of a passage that is known as the Freer Logion. And there's also a reference made to this by Jerome, but there's only one manuscript that has it. So although I listed five various endings, really that can be misleading. The dominant reading, the vast majority of manuscripts, is the traditional reading. And then the others are all minor variations. So since we're talking about the so-called shorter ending or the abrupt ending, I want to go down to the part of this paper where I discuss the seven extant manuscripts that have the so-called a shorter ending or abrupt ending placed between Mark 16:8 and Mark 16:9. And here we go. So in the paper, I talk about how that from the year 300 to 500, there seemed to be some controversy over the ending of Mark. And so let me just read this paragraph and we'll talk about the manuscripts that have the so-called shorter ending. I wrote, it was also during the period from AD 300 to 500 that we had the emergence of the expanded ending. That's the shorter ending added after the abrupt ending, after verse 8, and followed by the traditional ending, verses 9 through 20. According to the apparatus of the Nessalon 28th edition of the Novum Testamentum Graecae, there are six extant manuscripts, codices L, Psi, 083, 099, 274 in the margin, and 570, and one lectionary manuscript, which is lectionary manuscript 1602, that contain this expanded ending. The earliest of these, 083, could be dated to the 500s, that is, it's from the 6th century, while the rest are much younger. Here is a chart of the six New Testament manuscripts which with the expanded ending and their dates as listed in the Nessalon 28th edition. And there they are. So Codex L, dated to the 8th century, Psi to the 9th or 10th century, 083 to the 6th or 7th century, 099 to the 7th century, 274 margin to the 10th century, 579 to the 13th century. And then I note the final paragraph there, final line of the paragraph. These manuscripts provide then not only a witness to the shorter ending, but also to the traditional ending. And I'm simply making the point that these seven manuscripts, although they are the, that's it. This is what all we have for the Greek in the whole mass of the Greek tradition. We have seven manuscripts that have the so-called shorter ending, but all of them appear in manuscripts that where they're put after verse 8, but the manuscript continues to include verses 9 through 20. So every one of these manuscripts are not only witnesses for the so-called shorter ending, but they're also witnesses for the traditional ending for Mark 16, 9 through 20. And guess what? We have no manuscripts, zero manuscripts, where this so-called abrupt ending appears after verse 20. And so let's go back and look again at the Legacy Standard Bible. They've included this, in my opinion, spurious reading that was clearly rejected and did not have any tenacity, the favorite term of a certain internet apologist, and was rejected and was rejected as non-canonical by the greater Christian tradition. And now, for the first time, I think ever, it is included in a Protestant English Bible translation tacked on after Mark 16, 20. And they promptly reported all these instructions to Peter and his companions. And after that, Jesus himself sent out through them from east to west the sacred and imperishable preaching of eternal salvation. Now, I don't perceive that in that content of that verse, I don't see anything that strikes me as being particularly heretical or anything like that. But the problem is, this is a challenge to the integrity and the authority of the Word of God. This is a spurious statement, and there is not a single extant Greek witness where this spurious statement is tacked on to the end of this gospel. So the Legacy Standard Bible editors, translators have done something that is unique in the history of Christianity. And I wonder how many people, if they use this Bible, will sit down with this Bible and see that passage tacked on to the end, and they'll wonder, what in the world is this? I wonder, will there be preachers and Bible study leaders who will use the Legacy Standard Bible and who will attempt to preach and exposit this passage? It's just, I think, is an exhibition of the problems that we have today in broader evangelicalism with an unstable text of Scripture. So I think this would have been a great idea, a great subject to have come up in the debate between James White and Thomas Ross, but neither one of them talked about this issue with the Legacy Standard Bible. There are lots of other issues with the Legacy Standard Bible, like how the divine name is translated in the Old Testament, how the Greek term doulos is translated in the New Testament. So anyway, there are lots of issues with the Legacy Standard Bible. But anyways, I just wanted to point out this particular difficulty. And I thought it was especially interesting given that part of the content of the debate had to do with how many manuscripts contain a particular reading. You know, James White was critical of the received text because in places it chooses to go with a minority tradition, as in the use of the fellowship of the mystery in Ephesians 3:9, or the reading in Revelation 16:5, or the reading in the Coma Ioanneum, which the Legacy Standard Bible completely jettisons. And I find it ironic that they do that, and yet they include a completely novel innovation at the ending of the text of the Gospel of Mark. And they include this add-on spurious verse, so-called, in a place where it appears in no extant manuscripts. It appears in only seven manuscripts overall, Greek manuscripts. And one of those is lectionary. One, it's in the margins. So really only five manuscripts where it's copied into the text proper. None of those are early. They're not papyri. They're not early uncials. And yet this has now been incorporated into the Legacy Standard Bible. So I would just say, readers, beware. I would not recommend the Legacy Standard Bible. And I think if you read it, look at it, you should do so with caution. Well, with that, I'm going to bring this episode to an end. I know this is a bit of a shorter episode, but I hope this will be a helpful supplement to the ongoing discussion about the debate regarding the Legacy Standard Bible. I hope this has been helpful and edifying to those who are listening. I look forward to speaking to you in the next edition of Word Magazine. Till then, take care and God bless.